The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping educate you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. Our goal, to empower and put you in charge of your case. I'm your host, Attorney Noah Davis, broadcasting from the studios of KLAY 1180 in Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington. Be sure to check out our website at www.knowyourrights.com as we post the audio of each show as well as follow-up information on each program. You can also email me, many of you do. Please email me at noah@knowyourrights.com and I'll try to answer your questions and concerns as quickly as I can. So keep them coming. I appreciate all those emails. You can also visit clay1180.com for more information on me, the show, and additional programming on your conversation station. This is episode number 39 of Know Your Rights, cryptocurrency. What the heck is cryptocurrency? It seems to have no value. It has no physical form, purely electronic. It's decentralized through something called a blockchain. And according to one cryptocurrency expert, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency generally serve to separate money from the state. Well, what does that mean? You know, in that sense, I guess perhaps it's an electronic or global money revolution seeking to reshape human financial transactions and interactions. Is it that big of a deal? Is it that ground shaking? Are that many people using it? Well, it does seem that the one thing that you'll find is that it's gained a lot of traction. A lot more people are going into the realm of cryptocurrency, and it seems that it's here to stay with some 200,000 daily transactions involving Bitcoin alone. So, who's going to tell us about cryptocurrency? We're going to need to bring in our special guests for today, and that's attorneys David Otto and Andrea Louis. David, Andrea, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Noah.
Let's go back to the first question. What the heck is cryptocurrency?
Well, as a general definition, cryptocurrency is a digital asset designed to work as a medium of exchange that uses cryptography to secure its transactions, to control the creation of additional units, and to verify the transfer of assets. Cryptocurrencies use decentralized control as opposed to centralized electronic money and central banking systems. And the decentralized control of each currency works through a blockchain.
So, well, let's talk about blockchain. So we hear this in cryptocurrencies a lot. What's the blockchain part? Does every cryptocurrency have a blockchain?
So each cryptocurrency interacts with a blockchain, not necessarily the same blockchain. But as a basic definition, a blockchain is a distributed ledger where transactions are cryptographically recorded and verified.
So why did these currencies develop in the first place? Because if I think about it, you know, I have dollars in my wallet, I have a credit card, I can go to the bank, I can pay at Starbucks using my phone, but that's all backed by money. It's all US dollars. When I think of cryptocurrency, I think, how do the two go together? Am I just trading Shroop bucks? Am I trading something that doesn't exist, maybe coins from the laundromat? Like, what really is the value behind cryptocurrency?
Well, the creation and distribution of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin or BTC initially was designed to find another way to transact on the internet and to control your money, your wallet, your decision making, and not have it arbitrarily determined, that is, the value or the distribution of your money by third parties, namely governments and banks. So it was a movement toward, and continues to be, a movement toward decentralization. Decentralization as to decision-making, decentralization as to types of transactions, number of transactions, geographic limits or lack thereof of transactions, and the cost of transactions. So it's a means of freeing up decision-making, freeing up money, or a proxy for money, a cryptocurrency that is acceptable as a store of value and as a medium of exchange, and then to deploy that cryptocurrency, whether it's a BTC or some other cryptographic token, in an environment that recognizes it as value and will accept it.
So if I have a partner to do a deal in Australia, for example, and he's going to sell me, if I could make this transaction, he's going to sell me a kangaroo. And instead of sending him US dollars, which gets changed over into the currency of Australia, the Australian dollar, instead we choose to use a cryptocurrency, let's say it's Bitcoin. If we both have Bitcoin on both sides, we can agree on a value for the exchange, and then that Bitcoin gets changed into that value?
Well, yeah, and you don't even need Bitcoin on both sides. You need a buy-sell arrangement, and so you need the seller, in this instance, of the kangaroo, that is willing to accept BTC in exchange for the product or service being provided. And that acceptance is one of the things, we call it the adoption rate. It's one of the things that it continues to grow. That is the acceptance, use, deployment, and value associated with various cryptographic tokens, but certainly with BTC.
I had heard with respect to Bitcoin that it was created as like this peer-to-peer network or sharing. The way I read it is it dawned on me that maybe that was like a predecessor to PayPal. And I know it's not using cash, but was that kind of the idea? Was like an electronic version of PayPal that didn't use cash with respect to Bitcoin?
Well, it was born out of the 2008-2009 recession, and the idea was to try to find a technology and a vehicle, a coin, in this case, that could be used where there's a trustless, transparent, immutable way to transact and to ensure that what you are receiving on the sell side is what you expect. And the way you do that is by virtue of the distribution of a currency that works within a protocol, in this case the Bitcoin protocol, to ensure transparency and to ensure value. And and in the instance of Bitcoin, because it's deployed on a blockchain that's specific to the distribution, buying, and selling of Bitcoin, it's a robust and very secure network.
And going back to your kangaroo example, cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, when we're interacting using those, when we're transacting using Bitcoin, the parties don't name their price. Usually they agree upon a certain exchange rate at a date and time. But for some of the lesser known tokens, crypto tokens, then the parties can agree on a price on a decentralized exchange. But for coins like ETH or Bitcoin, there's usually a published exchange rate.
Well, I want to touch on, and I think there's a lot of areas for us to cover here. We're not going to be able to hit on all of them, of course, because this is a huge area of developing technology and also developing law. And we need to focus also part of the show on the legal implications of Bitcoin. But in this first segment, I also want to just talk about what backs this currency, because historically, the U.S. dollar was backed by the gold standard. And so theoretically, there was going to be gold that sat in Fort Knox. That was the value of the bills that were being, the coins that were being issued at the time, and then it became bills. And then you look at global currency, and the countries are supposed to be following a system where they're only printing so much money, and that system is supposed to be transparent. I don't think that all governments are following that, and that there's a lot of printing of money that's probably not going on to the registry. But how does that work with respect to Bitcoin? How do we value the money? And you can use Bitcoin as an example, or you can use one of the other cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, so we're off the gold standard, have been for quite a while. So the USD is what? It's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, for whatever that's worth. There are some people believe the reason the dollar trades as an international medium of exchange is because Our country has a set of laws and somewhat predictable institutional involvement in the establishment of legal rights and remedies, as opposed to being some sort of rogue nation. But ultimately, the use of currency and the willingness to accept it has to do with the individual participants in that transaction. The use of what's the Venezuelan currency? Bolivar, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, the use of a Venezuelan currency against a U.S. currency. Would you take that in a transaction for the sale of your home? No, in all likelihood, you wouldn't. Why not? Either you don't know it, you don't have faith in it, or you can't liquidate it. So, or liquidate it and get anything close to what you would if you transacted in USD. So the idea is to find a universal or in the more sort of granular ecosystems, a token that exchanges within that ecosystem that the parties recognize as valuable, will accept as valuable, will retain and store as valuable, and will recognize as a medium of exchange for goods and services that are transferred.
You're listening to Know Your Rights. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
My new Deli Trio and Turkey Bacon and Cheddar Panitos, both on toasted ciabatta bread, are the ultimate on-the-go subs. So to help you decide when and where to eat them, here are a few panidos and panidons. Eating while riding in a car? While riding on a car.
Woo-hoo!
While juggling chores? While juggling chainsaws. While tackling errands? While tackling errands.
Hey, that's me!
So panido, pick up a panido at a Jack in the Box drive-thru today. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights. If you listen to my show, you know I'm a big fan of legal plans. One of those plans is Legal Shield. With the Legal Shield membership, you won't have to worry about the cost of legal help because Legal Shield membership helps you pay for the legal services you need when you need them. Why don't you visit LegalShield.com and check out the plans which start at $24.95. Legal Shield, providing access to legal services since 1972.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
When I grow up, I want to be a bike that races around the
country.
When
I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
a...
I want to be
I want to
be
a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, a show dedicated to helping educate you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. Today's show, cryptocurrency. I'm here with attorneys David Otto and Andrea Louis from the law firm of Martin Davis out of Seattle. And we're trying to get our hands around what the heck a cryptocurrency is. For those of you out there that are like me and that haven't really been involved in this realm, there's a lot of questions that we have, and they're really basic to folks that have been dealing in cryptocurrencies. A lot of this vernacular, a lot of the language that's used sort of comes secondhand for them. But for us, you know, sitting on the sidelines, not sure what the value of this cryptocurrency is, for example, Bitcoin, we have a lot of questions. And so our guests today are trying to tackle some of those questions. Before I ask the next sort of set of questions that I had, I wanted to talk a little bit about your background and how you became involved in this realm, because we as lawyers, and David, you and I had a conversation off air about this, we as lawyers are pretty conservative people. We're not usually on the cutting edge of technology. We're not the ones that are pushing innovation. I mean, Shakespeare's, I think it was Hamlet that said, you know, if he was going to create a revolution, the first thing he'd do is kill all the lawyers. And it wasn't to be funny. It was serious because lawyers hold back the fabrics of society. We are the glue. We like rules. We like the system that's in place. We don't want things to change. We like things the way that they are. So how do lawyers like you end up becoming sort of innovators yourself and involved in this this technology?
Well, I can tell you how I got started was so my background, just briefly, started on Wall Street in 87, worked in Wall Street in capital markets, corporate finance, securities, M&A from 87 to 92. Came out to Seattle. I'm from Seattle originally. Came back out to Seattle in 92. Worked with a couple of law firms and sort of private placement, transactional work and securities. Formed my first firm, the Otto Law Group, in 1999. Ran that for 12 years and then formed Martin Davis in 2011. The practice has been principally transactional, capital markets, some real estate, and securities. So in 2012, an individual introduced me to a fellow who had an exchange, a BTC to USD exchange. And what he was doing, he was taking BTC, he was exchanging it for USD, or vice versa, USD for BTC, and enabling the parties that were looking for that exchange to transact with their currency of choice, BTC or USD, or liquidating the BTC out of that digital currency into a fiat currency. Looked at that business. It was an interesting business. It was one of the early, one of the first early exchanges. Realized pretty quickly that the licensing regime that's in place relative to money transmission and exchanges was not being followed by this company, and we shut it down. But the initial sort of foray into cryptocurrency and looking at the widespread use, or what at least appeared to me to be widespread use and adoption facility that BTC provided, just made me look a little deeper into how it could be used, why it's interesting, what functionality a digital currency could have, and then understanding some of the sort of philosophical underpinnings of why it's important to have a digital currency free of more or less free of government oversight or distribution via banks or feed on a transaction by transaction basis.
It does seem like there's a little bit of a marriage behind the value of the currency in sense of its utility, but also in the sense of this either social governmental background or this philosophy, political philosophy or view that people have about how much involvement the government has in their lives.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think sorry, Andrew. Let me just it's very much a social political revolution may be too strong a word, but certainly there's very much of that grounded in the idea that people should control their assets. They should control their identification. They should control their medical records, and they shouldn't be victims of some large database that gets hacked because it doesn't have the proper protection, it doesn't have the proper security measures. And so this is the initial sort of seeds into the ground to try to establish how and when and what individuals get to control and individuals get to distribute. It is also foundational in rearranging the nature of the relationship between institutions and individuals. And I think we see a lot of that sort of frustration politically right now, where people don't really like the way institutions are operating because they're operating in a way to kind of perpetuate themselves as opposed to serving the people they were designed to serve.
And I just got another notification, this one from Marriott, or Sheraton Marriott, that my information was disclosed, and that was after Amazon and then Target before that. So Andrea, what about you? What's your background connection to this realm?
So my background and intro into this space is a little bit different. After I graduated from law school, I was working at a large firm in Seattle where I focused on corporate issues for startups. And after being there for a while, my friend started a startup, and I joined that startup. And when I was working at that startup, it was a cooking recipe-related startup, so not crypto-related at all. I really enjoyed the type of cross-functional work that was there. It was a six-person startup. Each person was the head of their department, if you will. But after that startup was acquired, I wanted to go back to the law, but I wanted to go into something, an area that was emerging and, you know, cool, cutting edge. I'd been in the technology and startup space for a little bit at that point, and I wanted to see if lawyers could also do cutting edge things and not just work on as service providers for companies who are creating cutting edge technology. And that's when I started to learn more about blockchain and crypto. And as part of that, I would go to various meetups within or in Seattle, and just to learn more and ask questions and get a sense of the space. And at those meetups, I realized that I was often the only woman in the room. Mm. So, you know, personal plug here. I started this group, this meetup called Women in Blockchain Seattle. So take a look at that.
What's the website for that? Or is there one?
It's like meetup. It. Yeah, Google it, meetup.com. I think it's Women in Blockchain Seattle, or you can just Google that. But after meeting people at those meetups, I asked, do you know any lawyers who are working in the space? And I got directed to David and met him, and here we are. But one of the best things I think about working in the space as a lawyer, more than in other industries or practice groups, we as lawyers get a chance to work cross-functionally, because as far as the securities issues that we'll talk about soon, later in the show, they implicate a lot of different departments within the company. We work with not only the leaders of a company, but also the marketing team, the technical team, and that's something that I really enjoy.
So I want to get back to, in this second segment for the show, I want to get back to the value of the currency. And I don't yet have a really good understanding of how it's valued. And I'm going to give you a very basic, archaic example again. And I'm going to use Bitcoin because that's the most popular. And it seems, I did a quick look up this morning, and there's like 15 major, I'm sure there's like thousands of these out there, but there's like 15 major currencies or something. And Ethereum is the number two.
Ethereum
is number two, and then there's a variety of Ethereum too. But Bitcoin is by and far the largest and most sort of generally widely accepted. I saw that the value of one Bitcoin, and don't quote me on this, it was like either $537 or $700, and that didn't make a lot of sense to me. And here's the question that I have in this sort of realm of it's not really a hypothetical. It's almost slightly factual, but in this ideal that I'm this picture that I'm painting, if Bitcoin is worth $537 or $735, how did that number? How do we end up subscribing to that number? Has it increased over time? Is it kind of like a security that appreciates in a way? And could it just lose its value altogether? I mean, how do we end up setting this? Another question I want to add on, and I know this is going to get complicated, is are there more of these being issued? Like, is Bitcoin, is someone rolling it out, you know, virtually every year, and who's in charge of that? So if you give a shout out and see if you can tackle some of those questions I just had.
Well, I'll let Andrew talk about the Bitcoin blockchain and the mining and the sort of way that Bitcoin gets issued and distributed as it's mined and as transactions are validated. Relative to value, so Bitcoin today is trading at, I believe it's around $3,400 per BTC. And Bitcoin is transacted at the eight points to the right of the decimal point. So there are absolutely fractional interests in the entire coin, that 3,400. You don't have to transact that one or two in whole numbers, basically. Question as to how does it get valued? It's market. It is pure market forces. It is whether or not people are willing to accept this digital currency as an alternative currency for purposes of transacting. There are people that accept it for coffee, that have accepted it for the sale of vehicles, that have accepted it for the sale of condominiums. So there is a willingness on the part of sellers to take that asset and use it as a store of value and a medium of exchange in connection with whatever transaction they're looking to effect. And largely, that's the way economies are born, whether it's a barter system, whether it's a coin, whether it's a token of some value, gold, silver, platinum, or
in the old days, as lawyers, and talking about like the founding fathers sort of days as practicing law, if you provided a service, you did someone's will or something, they'd pay you in like a pig. And maybe if you did a very valuable service, you get two pigs or something. So is it kind of like that where we're assessing, we're giving a value to something?
Yeah. What we're doing is looking at a digital asset or a virtual currency and agreeing that for purposes of transacting in whatever good or service or is being exchanged, that we're prepared to take something other than fiat currency. And that something other than, at this point, is virtual currencies. There are essentially two sort of predominant virtual currencies, which is BTC and ETH, ETH, or Ether, which is the digital currency derived from the Ethereum blockchain. And parties want another way to transact. They want a way that transact that is frictionless, and that is more efficient, and that is more cost beneficial, and where it is what they call peer to peer, where if I want something from you, Noah, a will, and I'm prepared to pay for it. And I want to pay for it direct to you. I don't want to write a check. I don't want to wire transfer money. I want to give you something of value, and you naturally will need to accept it. So whether it's the pig or the cow or the bale of hay as an exchange for that good or service, or it's a digital currency, 21st century technology and 21st century taxonomy is what we're looking at now. And it's a function of really the same economic principles and the same economic interests, just being driven by different mediums of exchange.
And if I'm going to accept, if you're going to pay for me or you offer to pay me in, let's say it's Bitcoin, maybe what I need to do is I have to do some research to see where else Bitcoin's accepted. Because if you're paying me in that and there's some other service or good that I would end up normally paying with US dollars, and I say, well, geez, okay, that actually, I look up maybe the value of Bitcoin and this is what it's sort of trading at, or the US dollar value that's placed on it. And then I see that I can purchase another service using Bitcoins, then why not use it, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And that's really central to the use of the virtual currency. It's this concept referred to as an adoption rate. Who's adopting the use and deployment of it? How deep is that adoption? Is it for everything they're selling in their store? Is it just for this handful of goods? Similarly on the services side. So the adoption rate is critical to the more sort of complete distribution of a virtual currency, or the use of a virtual currency. One of the interesting questions is how do governmental institutions, do large entrenched institutions like banks, respond when their control over the distribution of value or exchange of value, whether it's a printing of fiat currency or it's a storing of money, when that control starts to be less.
We've got to take another short break here on Know Your Rights. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
My new Deli Trio and Turkey Bacon and Cheddar Panitos, both on toasted ciabatta bread, are the ultimate on-the-go subs. So to help you decide when and where to eat them, here are a few panidos and panidonks. Eating while riding in a car? While riding on a car. While juggling chores? While juggling chainsaws. While tackling errands? While tackling errands.
Hey, that's me!
So panido, pick up a panido at a Jack in the Box drive-thru today. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Are you faced with a legal issue that you need help on? Why not try a legal plan? One of those plans is Legal Shield. You can visit www.legalshield.com, and you could learn more about what a legal plan can provide for you. Starting at $24.95, Legal Shield can provide help about debt, collection letters, bankruptcy, and family law issues, and other types of legal matters. Legal Shield, making legal services affordable since 1972.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for
taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP. We help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Know Your Rights, a show dedicated to helping educate you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. We're talking cryptocurrency. In studio with me are lawyers David Otto and Andrea Louis from the law firm of Martin Davis out of Seattle, Washington. Just before the break, we were talking about the values of cryptocurrency and trying to get my hands around really how we have a value in place for these types of virtual currencies that's being traded. Well, one question that we didn't get to, because I had asked a really large, convoluted question before the break, was whether or not there's new currencies being issued, if we're adding to the cryptocurrencies out there, or if we're just trading existing currencies. And Andrea, I'll put that question out to you.
All right. So whether different currencies are being issued really depends on the different types of currency. So Bitcoin is the most well-known, most used cryptocurrency, but it's also very different than most of the other cryptocurrencies out there. And the reason for that is that Bitcoin uses the consensus mechanism called proof of work. And consensus mechanism is basically how all the nodes or the computers within a network, let's say the Bitcoin network, how they agree on what is the truth when they verify transactions. So in Bitcoin's case, the way that new currency rolls out is through mining, Bitcoin mining. And that happens when a transaction takes place in the various nodes within the network. At a high level, they work to find a solution, a mathematical solution. And once a computer finds that right solution, they are rewarded by a certain amount of Bitcoin that has been programmed into the Bitcoin protocol as a block reward.
So the system has these built-in checks, and it relies on users that are maintaining, they're not necessarily maintaining, but watching, overseeing the gatekeepers in the system. And when they confirm transactions, when they're able to use their computer to match a code or something, then they're rewarded for doing that.
They automatically get the quote unquote new Bitcoin. And then the people who get the block rewards can then put the Bitcoin on an exchange, and then other people can have access to that Bitcoin. And this is different from other tokens. Ethereum, ETH, is the other major token, but other cryptocurrencies are very similar in that they are proof of stake. That means instead of people receiving tokens after they are mined, they can receive tokens when they're minted and issued. Minted is basically when the tokens are authorized or created, and they get issued based on how the organization that issues the tokens, how they predetermine or decide to issue out the tokens.
So, and David, maybe this is a question back to you. It seems then that these different cryptocurrencies have different sets of rules. I mean, are these rules like sort of published out there? What are these rules, and why do they make the cryptocurrencies a little bit different?
Well, the use of the crypto or the token will be in large part a function of what the issuer is looking to accomplish. If the issuer is, for example, looking to issue a token that will track various items in a supply chain, then the token is really a device for purposes of transacting on that blockchain, private or public. For the acquisition or distribution of the items sold in that supply chain. If you're looking to create a utility token that would have some level of functionality for use or consumption, the utility token enables you to access data, enables you to store content, enables you to access content, whatever the features and functionality are of that issuer for that business, that decentralized application or that platform is in large part what drives the functionality of that token or that that digital currency.
I want to shift gears a little bit over to the legal realm. And, you know, I love these hypotheticals, of course. As a lawyer, we love our hypotheticals. But let's say, hypothetically, I'm going to pay you for appearing on my show today in Bitcoin. Is that legal?
Can you pay me in BTC? Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, so what's the framework governing this? Is the state involved? Are the feds involved? What agencies in the federal government are going to regulate either this transaction or any transaction that I may do with some cryptocurrency like Bitcoin?
Well, there's a very significant amount of regulatory oversight. Some would say it's overlapping and somewhat opaque. The IRS views, and the IRS is very much a part of the oversight exercise, increasingly. The IRS views digital currency as inventory, as an asset. The CFTC, Commodities Futures Trading Commission, views it as a commodity. FinCEN views it as a currency, and the SEC views them as securities. So you've got different federal regulatory bodies, and they have a sort of different take on how to best quantify the evolution of cryptocurrency. There are a lot more subtleties involved in where, in how you go about the creation of a cryptocurrency and its what it is designed to do and how it does that. But the regulatory regime and the oversight of the distribution, issuance, creation, purchase, reselling, exchanging of cryptocurrencies is significant.
Well, it sounds like because of the different agencies that you just talked about that are all adding their rules and regulations to this, it sounds like, one, Congress has enacted. Number two, how can it? It's not a national currency. It's a global currency, right? And so I guess everyone's trying to get their hands around how do we regulate something that's not ours because it's not ours? And by ours, I mean a United States sort of product. But at the same time, these agencies are trying to fill the void saying this is it's becoming so prevalent because it is. Cryptocurrencies and Bitcoins particularly are becoming very prevalent commodities or securities or however you want to call it, you're seeing them more and more. So is that what the agencies are doing? They're trying to jump in. Is it trying to protect the consumer or the public? Or why are the agencies acting like they are?
I think there's certainly a level of investor protection involved. But the agencies are really, at least as far as I can tell, trying to strike a balance. And to the point you make, Noah, about the cryptocurrency is borderless. And if you strangle innovation in this country, what you do is you force that innovation offshore. It is a borderless world, the business of cryptocurrency, blockchain, distribution of goods and services via a cryptographic token. It doesn't stop at any border. It isn't designed to have a natural oversight from any federal.
It's designed to do the exact opposite, right?
Exactly.
It's designed to be decentralized. And once you start regulating it from a central sort of authority, you end up destroying it, right?
And destroying it, and or, as I say, it moves out of that jurisdiction. And so there are a number of countries that are trying to bring more beneficial pro-crypto regulations to the forefront, with the idea of attracting entrepreneurs and attracting the business model that's associated with the development of cryptographic tokens or use of digital currency.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Noah, You're Right.
My new Deli Trio and Turkey Bacon and Cheddar Panitos, both on toasted ciabatta bread, are the ultimate on-the-go subs. So to help you decide when and where to eat them, here are a few panidos and panidons. Eating while riding in a car? While riding on a car. While juggling chores? While juggling chainsaws. While tackling errands? While tackling errands.
Hey, that's me!
So panido, pick up a panido at a Jack in the Box drive-thru today. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Lawyers can cost a lot of money. I know. I'm attorney Noah Davis from the show Noah Your Rights. One way that you can help address the rising cost of lawyer fees is to get a legal plan. One of those plans is Legal Shield. www.legalshield.com. Why don't you have a look at their website? The plans start at just $24.95 a month. What's that? Cost of about 7 lattes in a month? It's not a lot of money, and yet it gives you access to a lawyer and can reduce the hourly rate of those attorneys while giving you some great services. Visit LegalShield.com. You won't regret it.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, 3 more fingers for everyone over 60, 2 over 50, 1 over 40, 1 more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, 2 if you're very overweight, and 3 if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up 5 or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, a show dedicated to help educating you on your legal rights and resources available. We're talking cryptocurrency. We're talking with attorneys David Otto and Andrea Louis from the law firm of Martin Davis out of Seattle. Just before the break, Andrea, we were talking about some of the legal framework that is regulating or attempting to regulate what's really been a void for a long time, and that's this cryptocurrency market or these exchanges or this realm or world that's out there. You know, I came across in the news just recently, I don't know if I saw it on Twitter or I read it in an article, but I saw that Mayweather had been busted by the SEC for partaking in something. I don't remember if it was an IPO or what he was involved in, but do you remember? Did you read that article?
I did. So the SEC is probably the most vocal regulator in the space right now. And one of the biggest concerns of the SEC is investor protection. And so both Mayweather and DJ Kelly were, they received a cease and desist order from the SEC. And for participating in ICO, that's an initial coin offering, and what's going on in an ICO is an issuer is issuing their token for the first time.
And like Noah Bucks.
Like Noah Bucks. And so in this example, Noah Bucks, or the tokens that Mayweather and DJ Khaled were associated with, the purchase and sale of those tokens were deemed to be the offer and sale of an investment contract and therefore a security. And that's how the SEC got involved. And usually, or what we've seen recently, is that the SEC has been going after the issuer of tokens. But in this case, Mayweather was not the issuer. He was just someone who was paid to promote the ICO. And
And didn't disclose that, right? Because he's on Twitter, and he's got probably a million plus followers. I mean, what better social media presence can you have than Mayweather has? And it's better than any initial offering statement in terms of getting information out. And what he needs to do, and I guess the SEC, that's why they're saying this, is he needs to be honest with people, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's regulations that follow initial public offering statements where you have to be honest with the persons that are going to potentially invest. And
right.
You'd better be disclosing that you're being paid to do this advertising to get people to invest in this.
Exactly.
So that seems like some, a good, it seems to me to be a good regulation, but I bet you there's some of those folks out there, and maybe you guys might be in this realm too, saying, no, hang on, get your hands out of my pockets here.
Yeah, the other issue is the not only the non-disclosure of the promotional role and the pay for promotion stuff, pay to play, but also the fact that a ICO or a token sale would be promoted. The promotion of the sale event is deemed to be problematic by the SEC. And they view that promotion is designed to, and I believe in the Mayweather case, there were some statements designed to encourage people to buy for purposes of expecting a profit. Mm. And when you buy with the expectation of profit derived from the efforts of third parties, you're into this, what the SEC has called the Howey test. And the Howey test essentially says that if there's an investment in a common enterprise where there's an expectation of profits from the efforts of third parties, then you have you've met the standard for an investment contract, and therefore you have sold or purchased a security.
So we have these different federal agencies without Congress yet acting. Maybe it's a good thing that Congress hasn't acted yet, but now you have this sort of erratic approach to regulation of the cryptocurrency market or realm. And these rules are probably going to continue to develop because as the cryptocurrency system evolutionizes, as more people get involved, you're going to see more agencies potentially stepping up to do more regulation. What about the state of Washington? Can states like our state act in this void and do something, take some type of action with respect to cryptocurrency?
They can. And it's also important to note that there's a lot more to cryptocurrency than just the issuance. Crypto touches a lot of different parts of the law, like privacy, like anti-money laundering, like consumer protection, as well as securities laws. And in our state, the state of Washington, the rules related to crypto are mainly related to money transmitter laws and what types of companies need to have a money transmitter license in order to be operational in the state of Washington. And so that's one thing that the state of Washington has tighter controls of who needs to get those licenses than other states do.
I always thought of cryptocurrency sort of being a dirty word. And I remember some other lawyer said, hey, get in on this Facebook offering. You're not really buying Facebook shares. You're buying some other company that's owning Facebook shares. And we're going to do it in Bitcoin. And I was like, wow. I mean, so first of all, I'm not going to own shares. And I'm owning in something else. And I'm doing these Bitcoins. And I said, no, I'm not buying that. I've always thought of it as a shady word. But David, you've told me and you've said it here today. I mean, it's actually, it's transparent. It provides sort of secrecy of information that you want to protect because there's a lot of people that don't want to give up their social security number, their bank card statements and things that people can use to steal money from them. So I'm starting to think, and maybe you've convinced me a little bit here today, that cryptocurrency has some real value for people out there and not just in a backroom sort of poker deal.
Oh, yeah. No, this is... This is revolutionary on many fronts, but yeah, it's moving to a new paradigm for the transmission of goods and services, where you can do that either in an enclosed ecosystem with some sort of token that parties accept as valuable, or in a broader system with a digital currency that transacts across borders. But in any event, or in all events, the expectation is that it'll be frictionless, that it'll be trustless, that it'll be immutable, that it'll be a record of the transaction, and that it won't be questioned. This is what you did. This is what is recorded. This is how it went down. This is when it went down.
And it's not anonymous. I think, and maybe Andrea, you've used this word, pseudonymous. What, can you explain that a little bit?
Right. So the transactions on the blockchain using cryptocurrencies are pseudonymous in that you don't have to, people don't know that they're dealing with Noah and Andrea and David when they transact with us. They might, but they really interact with our public keys, which are just
like 73595.
Right, just a random, you know, letter number generator. But it's pseudonymous in that the more transactions we do together, the more people can have an understanding and see the patterns in our transactions. And they see what we're buying, when we're buying them. And then from there, they can filter down and figure out possibly where we live and what we do. So in that way, it's not anonymous, but it's pseudonymous.
So I've heard that in some cases, it can help eradicate crime with respect to money. And that just, that strikes me as amazing because I associate cryptocurrency with crime, but it actually might be the opposite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the AML, anti-money laundering exercise, and the KYC, know your customer requirements need to be robust, and they need to be enforced, and they need to be transparent, because that is the sort of the wall, if you will, between the legitimate use and exercise of a crypto versus somebody who's in a pile of some washed money that they want to get into a crypto so they can get it out into a more easily transacting currency.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Know Your Rights. I want to thank our guests, David Otto and Andrea Louis. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Noah.
And for those of you out there, thanks for spending the last hour with us. We very much appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on Clay 1180. We will see you. Be safe out there.